We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
In 49 other states, football is just a game. But this is Wisconsin.
The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl. The Lombardi Trophy is coming home.
Wisconsin fans demand the best. The best analysis. The best interviews. The best coverage. And no one delivers like the Bill Michaels Huddle.
Huddle again this week. We're out on the road, and this time we are at one of the best sports bars in all of Wisconsin, not just Milwaukee, but Wisconsin. We are here at Stenny's. It's Second and National in Walker's Point. That's where you can find us, and the reason it is loud in the background, everybody is here. I mean, the Huddle, we'd like to say we're taking credit for it, but nevertheless, we are also watching the Brewers, and the Brewers in game one of the NLDS, currently up 2-0, and I'm sure throughout the evening you're going to hear crowd reaction. And we'll give you everything that's going on regarding the Brewers game in updates. And don't forget the postgame show locally on our flagship station, Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan is going to be coming up immediately following the Huddle tonight. Joining me here tonight from NFL Sirius Radio, Mike Clements. And from Dodds on Sport, John Dodds is here as well. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Great. Great crowd at Stenny's. It's a great place to watch the game and also talk some football. We're located in Milwaukee, and this is the Walker's Point area.
Yeah.
And I parked in Oak Creek.
Took an Uber over after you parked. Yeah. John, how you doing?
Great. Fantastic venue.
What a
great to be here.
This is like the Cheers of Milwaukee. I've always called it that.
That's a good example.
I've always called it the Cheers of Milwaukee. It's at some point or another, everybody ends up here at one point, and everybody starts here or ends here, and we've got Halloween parties that come here, and I mean, it's fantastic. So I want to get on with it, though, because while everybody's paying attention to baseball, Packers are going to be playing come Sunday. Let's go back to this past Sunday, Mike, and the comments that Aaron Rodgers made after the game. You find out that Ian Eagle and Dan Fouts sit down with Aaron Rodgers on Saturday. He talks about leadership and not pointing the finger at the coaches, then seemingly does. Then the questions he has to answer yesterday about whether or not there's a rift between him and Mike and, you know, philosophical differences and all that kind of stuff. Is that just water under the bridge and we're making more of a deal out of it than what is actually going on behind the scenes?
Well, I think the timeline explains Aaron's motives, and I think Aaron Rodgers is not being arrogant or aloof. I think he's 100% correct. He's a guy who just got the franchise deal. He's the quarterback through 2024. He just got paid $103 million guaranteed. He wants to consider himself a partner. He wants to be locked in as a Green Bay Packer. Hell, he's a part owner of the Milwaukee Bucks. He goes to Wisconsin Badgers basketball game. He comes out of Washington, D.C. down. His defense gives up 28 points in the first half. His defense takes yet another step. We were asking him questions, Bill, a couple of weeks ago, like, okay, we know, Mr. Elite Quarterback, that you can go a whole week without practice because you're so darn good, and you can just show up for the Sunday run-through and still play quarterback on a sprained left knee. But what about your receivers, particularly your younger receivers, like a Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who's only had, you know, has had under 100 snaps with you in the last couple of weeks. And now your game planning in each one of these things matters, not to mention the rest of the team out there. So he sees that they give up 28 points. He's at another lame Wednesday practice last week, and he realizes DeShone Kizer is not going to get this defense ready. So he gets out there, even though he's got some pain, runs through the practice. McCarthy comes out the next day and says, oh, man, best padded practice we've had this season yet. That's because Aaron Rodgers is on the field. There's a different attitude. There's this anger. There's this edge. And it makes everybody get on their game and get ready for real NFL football when 12 is slinging it around. So the next night, after that practice, he tells me that he went out with the offensive line for the Thursday night dinner, which is where they are right now. And while they're having dinner, he's looking up at the TV and he's watching the Rams put up 38 on the Minnesota Vikings. He's seeing the energy and the innovation of 32-year-old head coach Sean McVay, who that guy is a spark plug. I told you guys coming out of the combine, look out for these guys. They're just off the charts, off the charts. So he goes in a court bill, according to that story you told, he told the CBS guys, he told Dan Fouts, you know what? I got in front of the team yesterday. I told him, this is unacceptable. It's week four, guys. I don't care if you're young guys or we got a new defense or we changed the names in offense. I can't have any more mistakes. Get in, get your head in the playbook. Bill, yesterday I talked to a starter of the last two or three years and a really good guy and a guy that you've talked to recently, by the way. And I said, now what about that Lions game against the Jets and they got blown out versus what they did against the New England Patriots and all that? He goes, well, you know, we haven't gotten that far into the tape yet. It's 2 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon, Bill. I'm a disc jockey, for crying out loud.
Right.
How do I know more about the Lions
right
before this guy waits for the coaches to roll that out? You can't. This is what Aaron Rodgers is talking about. So then they go out there, and he said the defense did great. They got the first shutout since 2010. And when he says that, it's like he's suggesting, yeah, how come I got to wait 8 years to get a shutout? Why do I always have to, you know, compete?
Right.
How about the defense steps it up every once in a while? You know, thank you, Dom, and hey, Mike Benton, you're now next on the hot seat, whatever. But his offense, he said, was out of flow, not working. But, you know, he talks to McCarthy every day. He calls McCarthy out. He calls his teammates out. He yells at Marquez Valdes-Scantling on the sidelines when he doesn't come back to a ball that could have been taken for a pick six, could have shifted the momentum. Could have, you know, got Josh Allen going in that game. And then he comes back to the kid later in the game and throws him a nice pass to build up his confidence, because if you look at the injury report, he's going to need him on Sunday. But Aaron Rodgers is going to call people out in his own California way. It comes off as passive-aggressive, but he's a laid-back dude. He's not an anger guy. He's not a rah-rah kind of guy.
But is it right?
But he's a perfectionist. I think someone's got to be doing it.
Yeah. That's the
because
question.
Apparently
is it
the
right
head coach is not.
Okay.
The head coach gave the team off on a Wednesday because all of the scientific stats said, oh, they're pretty burned out after that overtime game, coach. You should let them sit on Wednesday. Just let them practice on Thursday. And then they get their butts kicked by the Washington Redskins.
I guess the question is, John, is this team then, in the description there, is it dysfunctional?
I don't think so. I'm going to discount what we saw against Washington. And the reason why is I think Minnesota had an overtime hangover against Buffalo. I think Green Bay had the same thing happen to them. I mean, that Minnesota-Buffalo game is the one game this year that does not figure at all. So I'm going to discount that. I think, likewise, after the Buffalo game, I don't know if you could really take stats and analyze stats based on what Green Bay has earned from that game, because that might have been the worst shutout 22-0 game I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it wasn't a dominant
no
defensive performance.
No, it was a rookie quarterback who had gone from.
They did a great job of confusing
a rookie quarterback who's been playing the first two or three weeks, you know, thrust into playing like, you know, he was back in college and running all over the field and diving over at the goal line and taking chances and, you know, hanging onto the football and chucking it 65 yards down the field and trying to hurl a Minnesota Viking, you know, at midfield. To the next week, they said, kid, we need you for the whole year. That stuff is over now. You stay in the pocket. You keep your feet planted. Trust your pass protection. Go through your checks. And he was lost. He was lost. And Mike Pettine, you know, the more he could tell he was getting to his head and making him hang onto the football, then the more that Pettine could dial up that stuff as that game wore on. But that was not much of an opponent at the end of the day to get your first shutout in 8-9 years.
I'm very high on Josh Allen. He reminds,
so am I.
He reminds me of Brett Favre. And there was
exactly.
there was one game, I want to say 92, they went to Cleveland, and Brett Favre was like 9 out of 25 for 75 yards, and they lost the game to Cleveland. You never know what a rookie quarterback is going to do. And I think Josh Allen was so off against Green Bay that I don't know if you can, all the defensive stats that you've gleaned from that, I don't know if you can use.
And John brings up another good point in terms of Minnesota and their hangover. They go from their overtime game the tie with the Packers to getting blown out at home and just overlooked. Listen, Minnesota was bringing in the Bills, and then they had the Rams in the Coliseum on Thursday night. Guess who they were already looking
at on
Saturday night, okay? And the other thing is that they had their Everson Griffin drama. My God, one of their prime leaders, one of the best defensive ends in the National Football League, had just been hauled off to a clinic by the team's ownership for mental illness. So they were going through that drama as well.
Looking at one of the numbers that I kind of follow Aaron Rodgers and company by, it's usually offensive when it comes to net touchdowns and not net points, because points are different. Points include what you're getting as field goals. This team has had 5 trips to the red zone in the last couple of weeks. Actually, 7 trips to the red zone in the last couple of weeks. Only converted 1. 2?
No, they had 2 touchdowns in the game.
They had 2 touchdowns in the game. But that was 1 from outside of the red zone, 1 inside the red zone.
Right.
The other 5 trips against Minnesota, they were 0-for. The only touchdown they had in that ball game was a special teams touchdown. So the question then becomes, if you look at their net touchdowns in the division, they're minus 1.
Still not worried about it, because I think the defense that they played against, very good Bears, very good Vikings. I think the Redskin defense is pretty good too. Buffalo was okay. But I asked one of the Buffalo Bills in the locker room afterward, how did you beat Minnesota? And he said, we got 3 turnovers quick and got up 17-0, and they couldn't run. Once we knew that they couldn't run, they're one of the best pass rushing teams in the NFL. And they have this Jerry Hughes, very quick defensive end that reminds me of KGB.
And what about 93 Murphy? Was that Trent Murphy? Bill, I was talking about him, all through the press box. I asked if I was bothering you because I couldn't believe how much Green Bay double-teamed against Buffalo's number 93, Trent Murphy. Big, tall. He kind of looks like a Joey Bosa type in his body build. He was injured a lot last year. But, man, was he coming on, and the Packers knew about this. Because they were there, you saw more Martellus Bennett than you've seen, the blocking tight end line up over there, or you saw that they would put maybe Ty Montgomery over there, but they had to help out Bulaga with 93 early and often in this win over the Bills Sunday, right?
The one thing that concerned me about the game was, and I'd love to get your opinions on this too, I thought Rodgers, since that concussion in 2010, has been the greatest quarterback in NFL history. It's been a run of about 7-8 years. He always has a sixth sense for when the rush is coming. Buffalo had 3 or 4 times where they delayed a rush and came around, and he didn't see it coming. He's always had that eye in the back of his head to juke it or whatever. He got crushed about 3 or 4 times, and he put the ball up where it was less than a 50-50 ball. It was an interception waiting to happen.
That Mike would have had if he wasn't taken off the field with the groin injury.
That was, you know what, first of all, I agree, John, the fact that he just didn't bounce up in the pocket. Normally he's got the feet. Can you attribute that to the knee?
I hope so.
He was coming off of that. He was coming off where he's just trying to get set up, and maybe you're thinking to yourself, because we saw four throws this past weekend that were off against Buffalo. 4 throws that we just didn't think were Aaron Rodgers-esque. So I'm wondering if it's the setup, if it's the follow-through, and he's worried about when you come through or when you set up and push off of that leg, whether or not it's ailing him more than we're being led to believe.
He had the one nice slide.
And I don't want to make excuses, but I'm just saying, since he got hurt, things have been a little bit different.
He had the one nice slide that was kind of weird because he kind of turned his body for the slide.
That's
so
the one he took
slide.
All the grass up and got it stuck in his knee brace.
Yeah, and he got all clogged up in his knee brace. He said, I've been sliding since 6th grade Little League,
Right.
But that was one of the worst slides I ever had.
Going to go ahead and take a quick break. We are broadcasting live at Stenny's. This place is absolutely positively packed. Come on down and be a face in the crowd. Hang out with us. It's standing room only right now, but then again, so is Miller Park. The ball game is on. The sound is up. We are here until 8 o'clock tonight, and then locally, it is the Milwaukee Baseball Postgame Show. Tim Allen, Baby Taus, Bill Schmidt, they're going to be here with all the Brewers fans, giving you the postgame reaction from the Milwaukee Brewers and the Colorado Rockies in Game 1 of the NLDS. We've got more of the Bill Michaels Huddle. We are brought to you by our friends at Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back The applause you hear is, I would love to say, for this program, because it is just that kind of an award-winning show.
What do you
show.
Mean? It's not for us?
No, Mike, not unless you took your shirt off. No, it is for the Milwaukee Brewers, who just got out of the top of the seventh. Josh Hader comes in, mows them down 1-2-3, and the Brewers continue on up 2-0, going to the bottom of the seventh. Mike Clements from NFL Sirius Radio alongside. I'm Bill Michaels. John Dodd from Dodds on Sports here as well. Talking about this team, some of the, I don't want to call it dysfunctional. I think that is probably an overblown term. But some of the things that seem to be warts right now on this team. Let's talk about the injury side of things, because we haven't really even gotten that deep into it. But Devontae Adams
came up with a calf injury yesterday, limited yesterday, did not practice today. Geronimo Allison's dealing with a concussion. He left the game against the Buffalo Bills. He's going through the protocol. He could still be back out there Sunday, just like Nick Perry was last week. Nick missed all of practice but was able to, you know, get into the game. We'll see how that works out. Randall Cobb had a hamstring injury last week, did not start against Buffalo, and has not practiced yesterday or today. And Randall Cobb now, hamstrings. Everybody thinks, you know, well, he could be off a week or two. No one's ever off a week or two with a hamstring. They're never, right? No one has a 10-day hamstring or tightness.
No.
You know, unless you're a linebacker or something like Clay Matthews. And particularly at this point of the season, they're just going to say, we got to find a way to beat Detroit without Randall Cobb, probably.
You would assume that Randall Cobb's not going to be there. You're going to have to rely on the young guys. The best news is that Jimmy Graham, who didn't practice yesterday, Mike McCarthy called it maintenance.
Yeah.
But he just gave him some time off, because you're going to need Jimmy Graham in this game.
It's a chronic knee, and it's a veteran football player, so he was limited today during today's important practice and pads. What else they got here? So then on defense, Kentrell Bryce at safety. Now, you know, we could do a whole segment here about safety play with the Packers right now. He was limited today in an ankle injury, and I don't know if it's the one that he had, you know, the surgery on last offseason that took him out a week or two out of training camp. Kevin King is trying to come back from a groin injury. He's had full participation the last 2 days. Mike Pettine would not commit, though, as to whether or not he was going to start. Like, I don't want to throw him in there yet. You know, he's going with a Tremont Williams and maybe a Josh Jackson on the corners against Golden Tate and that company. And Jermaine Whitehead. Here's a guy that's been now playing at nickel for you when Jair Alexander went down. And he's been playing, you know, he's a safety. He's been playing like a small linebacker in a dime package up there on the line. He had some kind of a back thing that popped up yesterday, and he missed practice today. So you're starting to get some of these outages in a secondary that already put, you know, their veteran Devon House on injured reserve for the rest of the year.
Let me ask you this, John. With the secondary the way it is and some of the youth that they've brought in, Kevin King, if he stays healthy, looks solid. He's got all those intangibles. I like the attitude that Jair Alexander brings. Josh Jackson is a guy that seems to be right place, right time. If this holds up and they mature, have they finally started to solidify the secondary?
I think they finally have. In fact, Jair Alexander is mighty impressive. He's probably as good as Terrell Buckley thinks Terrell Buckley was. That's how good this guy could be. And he's got the swagger and the speed. He gives you something different. He can guard that slot receiver, those little choppy New England Patriot receiver routes that can never be covered. He can cover that. Jackson is really a pro's pro. Jackson reminds me of Doug Evans or kind of a Craig Newsom type, the big kind of quiet, silent, steady.
You know, and exactly, John, the thing about Josh Jackson right now, he's probably your best pick of the young guys because of the durability. You know, Jair Alexander, let's hope he gets there and figures out how to survive physically in the NFL. We need to hope the same for Kevin King as well, right?
Yeah.
But right now, you know, knock on wood, Jack, as they call him, Josh Jackson, because they got too many Joshes back there, according to Mike Pettine. Jack Jackson is the most durable, and, you know, can stop the run and can pick off a football. Jair Alexander's closing speed, and he's so smart, though. I mean, for a rookie, for 3 or 4 games into it, you can see him baiting quarterbacks too. You know, you can see him laying off.
Well, that's what he was good at in college.
Yes, at Louisville. Yep.
He was great at that in college. He'd lay back a step or two, and then he had this like hitch step where he could just kind of kick it into a different gear. bait a quarterback into a throw, lock on his eyes, and the minute the ball was in the air, then he had the closing speed to do it.
One-handed interceptions, he could pull the ball out of the air right in front of the intended receiver.
But let's go to HaHa Clinton-Dix, because a lot of that secondary when it comes to the safety play last year was not great. He seems like he's redeeming himself. And that interception he had this past weekend, that was a man's interception. That was the HaHa that we come to know and love.
Third consecutive game where he had an interception. I think they're still disappointed in his play. I think they're talking. This is his contract year. They're talking to him. They got to extend him. Is he the guy you want? And I don't know. It just seems like his tackling has not been up to speed. He shies away from contact, but then again, he's making interceptions.
So
what's your call on HaHa?
I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't
get
it.
Be better.
Sometimes I thought last year maybe he's hiding an injury or something. I don't get why he's just not playing with more reckless abandon. Leroy Butler says
that's the way he did when he first got here.
Leroy says, well, look at the tape. They got him deep, man. He's the deep guy, and you haven't been beat that many times in deep routes. And then, of course, you end up having Stephon Diggs, 75 yards. That was Kentrell Bryce. And then the one to Paul Richardson against the 46 yards against the Redskins. Kentrell is a tough guy. Came back from the injury. Comebacks, when you think he's out for 3 or 4 weeks with an ankle injury, he's back in 9 or 10 days. Really tough guy. Respect from a lot of the teammates, but he's getting burned, and he's making plays that expose him as the undrafted, you know, Cinderella story that he is. Now I've got some of your listeners now hitting me up and saying, hey, why isn't this team going after Earl Thomas if he's upset with Seattle?
Right.
You know, that could be a Super Bowl run. And, of course, you know, the Seahawks' attitude was he's 29. We love him. He's done a great job with us. We don't want him next year. And we're not going to sign him to anything. We don't want him. We need to move on. We need him for this year. He's under contract. Then, of course, as fate would have it, he breaks his ankle.
Yep.
And I told you the story when the Seahawks could have won the Super Bowl against the Patriots. They're down at the 2, and instead of handing off to Marshawn Lynch, Russell Wilson gets called for the pass play, the slant. Malcolm Butler picks it off for the Patriots. They go on to win. I'm in that locker room. In comes in Richard Sherman, loudmouth of the Legion of Boom, and Earl Thomas sits next to him. They're in two folding chairs. Sometimes at the Super Bowl, you get better access than any other time of the year. Now Pete Carroll comes in and apologetically gets on one knee, puts his arms around these two guys that are humped over, you know, in sad mode after losing the Super Bowl. All right, they're both better, towels on their head. And Pete puts his head between their two heads and their ears and is consoling them and explaining to them what the play was, what happened, why they just lost that Super Bowl, apologizing to him, I'll make it up to you, all that kinds of things. Richard Sherman turns and says, I got you, coach. I got you. It's okay. Earl Thomas is like an elbow. Gives him an elbow. Get off of me. I don't want to talk to you. Just get out of my space. That's the way Earl Thomas is. So he breaks his ankle last week, and what's he do? He's on the cart, and he flips off the Seahawks.
Told everybody over there, they're number one.
What about Eric Reed? Well, Eric Reed is the guy who was taking a knee with Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
And when the league had some of these other players that were involved to say, hey, you know what? Let's do something positive. The NFL will put up $90 million to go back into the community and to try and make some changes in tough neighborhoods and relations between police and minorities and all that. Eric Reed called that out and said, that's just the NFL trying to buy people off. Well, you know, at some point, you start saying to yourself, okay, it's one thing for your political beliefs and what you think is right and issues and all that, but at some point, if you're never going to be part of the solution, then we really don't want you on our team. So he gets signed by the Panthers. We'll see how that works out, but I know that story about Eric Reed turned off a lot of NFL GMs.
Going to go ahead and take a quick break. We are broadcasting live down here at Stenny's. Packed house as everybody is in here to watch not only our show, but then again the Milwaukee Brewers, who are in the bottom of the seventh right now with a runner on, one out, and trying to extend their lead. 2-0 right now is where it stands, and they're trying to win game one of the NLDS. Don't forget, we'll talk some baseball coming up after the game is over. Also, Tim Allen, host of the Baseball Postgame Show on the flagship station out of Milwaukee, Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. He and Baby Tausch, Bill Schmidt, they're going to be here doing the Baseball Postgame Show, so come on down and check that out till 10 o'clock tonight as well. Stay tuned. We got more of the Bill Michaels Huddle brought to you by Bud Light coming up right after this.
border to border. The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back to the program. Bill Michaels Huddle. We are out on the road. We were at Steny's and Walker's Point, 2nd and National. That's where you can find us. An absolutely positively packed house here tonight. As many in this place, obviously, to hear the Brewers, see the Brewers. This ball game right now, as the Brewers are trying to play their third run of the game in the bottom of the 7th. Mike Clemens alongside from NFL Sirius Radio. John Dodd from Dodds on Sports here as well. We're talking Packers and Lions. The Brewers are trying to win game one of the NLDS. It is an electric crowd. And I don't get to say that very often when we go on the air. You know what I mean?
Well, I thought they were trying to get me to wake up, you know, and pick up my game a little bit.
Is that
bit
what it
too.
Is?
Yeah, I was concerned about that.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, you're rounding third and heading for home then, is what you're saying. An old Joe Nuxall reference right there.
Ed Cedar, give me the go sign, baby.
Wow, Mike, go ahead and make a turn. Hey, let's talk about when we were talking before about the offense. The one thing we have not mentioned is the run game. And I think the run game, while you need the passing game and you need the weaponry of the passing game, is this an opportunity with some of these wide receivers being down that they're going to go ahead and start to concentrate on the run game? Or is this just playing coy, John, to where they're going to say, well, all our receivers are down, but they're still going to wing the ball all over the place and Aaron Rodgers is still going to be Aaron Rodgers?
Well, they're a pass-first team no matter what. And the interesting thing, these wide receivers, I've covered the Packers for 40 years now, and I've never seen a group of young wide receivers with this much ceiling. You don't know which one is going to end up to be the best, but they remind me of Davante Adams in 2015, his rookie year, where he wasn't even active the first game. He barely played against Detroit, and then he wins the Miami game by getting out of bounds to stop the clock at the end of the game
right. When
there's no time left. So they're very interesting. I think Moore played last week for the first time. Moore, I think, has the biggest upside. The fourth-round pick, he's got an acceleration and extra gear that the others don't have. Valdes-Scantling has just one flat-out speed. He ran right by a Buffalo Bill cornerback last week. And St. Brown is his knock is, can he go over the middle without alligator arms? That's
right.
the toughness issue.
He's got long arms and big hands. He reminds me, if he can do it, he reminds me of Donald Driver. Driver was a guy that made his living inside slant, go over the middle. He would take some tenacious hits, bounce right back up, shimmy shake, drop the ball for a first down. He became kind of that possession guy.
Ed Jamon?
No, I'm talking about Equanimeous St. Brown.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
To go over the middle. And to I kind of equate him a little bit to that.
Yeah.
I just don't know if he's ever going to develop into that.
One story on Donald Driver. Favre mentioned one time when he knew Donald Driver was going to be a great player is when he knocked on the quarterback meeting room, and he said, our wide receiver meeting is over. Can I come in here and just watch what you guys are looking at? And he just said, who's this guy, Donald Driver? This guy's a pro. And he wanted to learn everything. That's what Jordy Nelson did, too. Learn it from what the quarterback is seeing.
Right. And it ended up working out really well because it got down to where hand waggles and a mere glance, all of a sudden they were on the same page. That and the fact that they rode to work together and we're good friends, but nevertheless.
Yeah, I'd love to see the Packers every once in a while try and have a run game and keep the ball away from Matt Stafford, who Mike Pettine said today is a prep junkie. He says, everything I know about this guy in my years in the league, and Matt Stafford is underestimated as to how well he preps in the game. In terms of that running game, let's see here. You know, Byron Bell, I don't think Justin McCray may have lost his job at right guard right now, but where Brian Bulaga is and still trying to come back from his knee, they don't seem to be interested in blowing people off the line. I don't know how you measure the Matt Patricia defensive line right now. Ziggy Ansah's got a shoulder injury. He's their right defensive end. He's probably their best player on their line. He was limited in practice. And they got Ricky Jean-Francois.
Right.
A guy that you put out there in limited rotation last year, with the 2017 Packers, a guy that you actually cut who went to go play for the Patriots and go to the Super Bowl. Down the field, Quadre Diggs is their safety back there, one of their, actually, perhaps their best safety, and he broke his hand in the game against the Cowboys. So yesterday he came into the locker room with a cast on. The reporters there think he's going to try and give it a go, but one of the trainers had to help him tie his shoe. So if he's out there with a cast on his hand, what do you think Aaron Rodgers is going to, you know, point one of those
right.
rookie receivers to go take a route down there?
But it's all about the rookie receiver being on the same page with Aaron Rodgers. I mean,
yeah.
I would talk to – we talked to John Kuhn this past week, and I asked him, I said, is the lack of timing with preseason and such, what does it mean? He said, it's all talk. He said, in essence, you got to get out there and do it, because eventually when they start coming at you for real and not just jogging through against a scout team, it suddenly everything gets a little bit faster. And he said it takes a few games to get that going. So maybe this fifth game – because normally it's four games for the Packers to finally get their offense going, but maybe it's this fifth game that finally gets this thing timing-wise off the snide.
Darius Slay also, left corner, a dangerous guy that can pick a football, you know, and take it back. So those are some of the things that are on Aaron Rodgers' checkoff list as he's trying to find gaps in the Detroit Lions defense. Now, I'll tell you what, so the Lions gave up, you know, 40-plus points to Sam Darnold in week one of the Jets when he came into that game, right? But when you watch that game, the Jets had some crazy good plays on special teams. Matt Stafford threw four picks. I mean, just like, what are you? I think he was drunk. I couldn't believe some of the decisions that he made. But he kept on giving the rookie quarterback, John, a short field, and that's why they put 40 up on him. This Detroit Lions defense came back, and they held Tom Brady and the New England Patriots to 10 points in Detroit. And you know the way they did it? Well, first of all, Matt Stafford had long, sustained drives. Looked great. Golden Tate. Oh, this Golden Tate's going to be the best receiver the Packers have faced so far this season. He's playing great, man. And he's on the same page. And if you make a mistake,
Golden I wasn't even Tate's sure he was still in the league. It seems like he's been around for 13 years.
Yeah, but he has. But I'll tell you what, he looked really good in the last couple of games of the tape that I saw, and particularly down in Dallas. They had the lead against the Cowboys. You know what killed the Lions? Zeke Elliott. Oh, my God. He had a tremendous game. It was one of these, comeback heart attack wins where Jerry Jones literally fell to the floor of the suite when they won with that new kicker they replaced Dan Bailey with for a walk-off field goal, 26 points. Zeke Elliott had a run for 20 yards. Later he had one for 41 yards. Later he had a pass and catch where he took it for 25, 31 yards. Zeke Elliott tore up the Lions all by himself, and he was an offensive machine. And that's how the Cowboys beat an otherwise good-looking Lions team.
Cowboys also have a really solid offensive line.
It starts with
Zach Martin and works its way out from there.
And the other thing, too, is that the Lions are also still making a lot of penalties, killing their drives, killing themselves. Matt Patricia comes in as the new coach, defensive coordinator of the Patriots, and he just lost a Super Bowl to a two-year coach, you know, Doug Peterson and Nick Foles. But Detroit still wanted to hire him, and he's a great guy when you talk to him in person. He's really smart. He was literally in rocket science before he got into football full time. When you talk to him, it's like you're talking to a friendly, you know, chemistry teacher. Who it's a tough class, but he's going to help you get through it. And Lane Taylor told me, I said, so how much difference does the Lions defense look? He says, everything. Scheme, technique. They've got same players that are handling them, doing hand combat in a different way that they have not seen from these Detroit players. So that's what the Packers offensive line is working on, a whole new look. But Matt Patricia, you know, he had the Me Too kind of thing in the offseason, you know, sexual harassment claim from back in college. And now I don't know if he's either making mistakes as a game manager or maybe he's made things too complicated at times. But the guys at the Detroit Free Press did an interview yesterday, and they said, we're not sure if this guy's already lost the locker room in Detroit in one of
the games. Second game, he looked lost.
Yeah.
He looked on the sideline as if he, you know what he reminded me of was Ray Rhodes. Remember the look that Ray Rhodes had? Ray Rhodes was a defensive guy.
Disaster.
He was unbelievably prepared. He was what they called the workhorse, you know.
John rolling his eyes.
But remember when Ron Wolf hired him, it was because of his work ethic.
Yeah.
Well, what they didn't know was his work ethic was because it was so scattered. There wasn't coherence to it. You know, it was just...
You got to create the message.
It's kind of like you're flying through all the papers and throwing them in the air until you go, okay, I found this one, you know.
Yeah.
But all the 30 other papers are on the... It kind of seemed like that. That's the way Matt Patricia looked on the sideline.
Years later, I asked Ron Wolf, why did you hire Ray Rhodes? He said, I thought to compete in free agency, we had to bring in a guy like Dennis Green. I respected Dennis Green up in Minnesota, but Ray Rhodes wasn't the same guy. He went to Philadelphia, and he lost it. Whatever he had, he lost. He wasn't tough. There was no discipline. You raised a good point before.
Ray Rhodes, a defensive coach,
yeah,
who when Holmgren left for Seattle, he took over. They went 8-8. And
he was fired.
Even though they were 8-8, and you know, he had Brett Favre and still the leftovers of that Super Bowl team from the 90s, it was because people just said there was such little accountability in that locker room when Ray took over the next year.
You raise a good point about John Kuhn. You're talking to him. My read watching the Mike McCarthy years since 2006 is he's extremely easy on the team in camp. And the team pays for it in September. In September, they're not in midseason form.
Yeah.
They're just so fearful of injuries. All they're trying to do is get through September. If you look at Mike McCarthy's records in September, not as good as they are in November and December. Now, Jim, when you're talking about tackling, they're missing tackles on defense. They're tackling donuts for the most part. Why? Because they don't want anybody hurt.
Yeah.
That's what Jim Caldwell in Detroit would do. He would be a player's coach, real easy on them. Patricia, the exact opposite. It's bull in the ring. It's tackle this. And then there's a mutiny possibly.
Yeah, and he took them not once but twice. He took them on the road for scrimmages against opponents. He would go and scrimmage a team for 2 or 3 days before they went and played the preseason. I mean, he drove those guys to try and make them as tough as he could. Yeah, the Ray Rhodes reference. He takes over for Holmgren in 1999. He goes 8-8. He's replaced by Mike Sherman. And you know who Ray Rhodes' quarterback coach was that year?
Mike McCarthy.
Mike McCarthy. Oh, what comes around. Well, Mike McCarthy saw what not to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, but Ray was one of those guys. Ray was a player's coach, very much so. But when I talked to Ron and I said, what went wrong? He said he just wasn't the guy that I thought he was. You know,
right.
On the out, it's kind of like the duck. The duck above the water looks very cool, calm, collected. But below the surface, it can be chaos. And that's what it was.
When you're a defensive coordinator, you can sort of be bad cop, okay?
Right.
But when you're the head coach, you feel like you kind of somehow make everybody happy. And you dial it back when, in fact, you've got to set the tone when you set foot into that stadium.
Going to go ahead and take a quick break. We're running a little bit late, I know, but what great conversation. We are broadcasting live the Bill Michael Settle. We're down here at Stenny's and Walker's Point. It is right now top of the eighth, and Hader is just mowing people down right now. As the crowd is here for the Milwaukee Brewers in game one of the NLDS, they're up 2-0 right now with one out and Josh Hader on the hill. We'll keep you updated on that game and keep you updated as the NFL gets ready to kick off tonight as well. We've got more brought to you by Bud Light coming up right after this.
16 stations strong, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back. Bill Michaels Huddle is on the air. We are broadcasting live. We are here at Stenny's in Walker's Point, and we're getting you ready for the local show, which is going to be the Milwaukee Baseball Postgame Show. Tim Allen, Baby Tausch are in the house. They are here. I'm Bill Michaels alongside right now. We've got John Dodd from Dodds on Sports, Mike Clements from NFL Sirius Radio talking some NFL. You've got the NFL, which actually gets underway a little bit later on tonight, and which is always exciting. But we're sitting here talking about the Packers. We only got a couple of minutes before the top of the hour. So, Mike, going back to this Lions team, and I said to Dan Miller, the voice of the Lions today, who was on the air with us, I don't know what the hell to make of this team right now. I don't know what to make of them. They played really well against the Patriots. They played poorly in other areas. They looked good against the Cowboys but fell short. I don't know what to make of them.
I think you got to consider them a dangerous team at home. I think the Packers are going to have to work at this. I don't think it's the same old Lions. I really don't. And the thing about that concerns me the most, John, is Golden Tate. I mean, he looks smart. I think he's the best receiver that the Packers have faced so far this year. And it's certainly the best quarterback, right? It's the best
pretty
quarterback,
much, yeah.
Better than Alex Smith. So, you know.
We consider him better than Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, you know, and I think that's going to be a concern, you know, for Tremont and Josh Jackson and whether Jair Alexander's out there. And the other options you got in the secondary.
Yeah, the ultimate Packer killer, which is Marvin Jones.
Yeah, great point. You know, Mike Pettine talked about him today.
He crushed him when he was with Cincinnati.
He just kills him.
Yeah, that's right. He had a big game against him against Cincinnati.
Because he was opposite A.J. Green in Cincinnati, and that's when Dunlap and Simpson had such a big game coming off the ends against Aaron Rodgers. That was a Mike Zimmer scheme football team.
Mike Pettine, Packers defensive coordinator, said today, you know, the thing about it is he's got it all. He's good at the short game, okay? He's got a tremendous catch radius, and he catches deep passes as well. And if you're not paying attention to him, he could do a lot of damage to teams. They're paying him pretty good in Detroit, and that might be the second best receiver that these Packers have faced so far.
And they have Galladay, that new big young wide receiver with the big catching radius
and physical too. That kid, yeah. That kid's physical as well.
Going to go ahead and take a quick break. We're at the top of the hour. We are broadcasting live. We're at Stenny's in Walker's Point. We are at 2nd and National in Milwaukee, which is one of the best sports bars, not only in Milwaukee, but in the state of Wisconsin by far. A fantastic place. Home, by the way, of the Bill Michaels garlic cheese bread, which, Mike, you have had block your colon numerous times, which is fantastic.
I ordered the block colon.
We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We got another hour yet to go. The Brewers are trying to close out the Colorado Rockies. It's the bottom of the eighth. They're up 2-0. We'll keep you up to date on that game, and I'm sure you're going to hear the roars of the fans in the background as well. Stay tuned. Another hour of the Bill Michaels Huddle, brought to you by Bud Light, comes up right after this.
Everywhere in Wisconsin, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.